We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen, I think something is happening.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
Whatever appears emerges as raw experience for those who watch it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Sordid Cinema Podcast. I am your temporary host, Patrick Murphy, filling in for Simon Howell, who could not be here because he does not like Marvel movies. Joining me, as always, is Ricky D.
Now, I would like to think that if I could be given one nickname for today's show, it would be Spectacular, not Amazing.
Ooh, the Spectacular, not Amazing. Okay, so what about Marvelous?
No, thank you. Although, I'm in a really bad mood, which we can talk about soon, but if the Vulture actually has a nickname aside from the Vulture, I would be the Vulture of today's show. I'm the big baddie.
Nope, no nicknames, just the Vulture. He's changed.
Who's that?
Oh, that speaking is a, for those of you who may listen to the N-Express Nintendo podcast, also listen to Goombastomp.com by Ricky D and myself, that is our co-host Tim Mason, who is basically our MJ in this group.
Oh, you're MJ, am I? I'm the hottest. Is that what you're saying?
Tim, finally on the Sordid Cinema podcast. We've been podcasting for well over 2 years, hosting the N-Express podcast, but you've never, ever made an appearance on Sordid Cinema, so welcome.
Thank you. It's super good to finally be here. I don't know how many times I have to ask you guys questions about movies before you're like, oh, hey, we should invite him.
Do you know things about movies, Tim? I don't know. I had a conversation with you at E3 about the Star Wars movies. So,
yeah, I've studied some cinema throughout my time in college at University of Washington, on top of just watching a lot of movies. So, yeah, a little bit here and there. Not on your guys' level, okay? You guys are insane. Like, I thought I knew a lot about cinema history, and I've watched, you know, a ton of French New Wave and Italian stuff, but you guys take it to a new level. You're
no, Rick and Simon do. I'm just, I'm probably more on your level. But you did manage to debate that you managed to sort of make a strong case that The Force Awakens was actually good, so I'm going to give you credit for that. You did not win me over, but you made a good case.
That's the point of a discussion, right? Isn't to necessarily win someone over, just to, like, stake your claim and be like, no, this is my opinion, and you will acknowledge and accept that I have this opinion. That's what it really is.
Well, actually, Tim, so you're on our Spider-Man show, so before we get to the actual review of Spider-Man Homecoming, like, what is your knowledge of Spider-Man? Are you a fan of the comic books, previous films? Do you have no knowledge of the character?
I have an insanely lengthy history with Spider-Man, from watching the 90s show as a kid to then collecting comics. I'm kind of like a purist. I started collecting the original series, and so all of my true history with Spider-Man, where I'm like closest to the guy, I would say, is like the original run, you know, one through what have you. So that's where I'm like really, really into Spider-Man. That's where I think he's the most compelling, which is brings a good tie into Homecoming. But yeah, I read a lot. I've watched all the movies. For better or worse, I have opinions about the movies because I am such a hardcore fan. But me and Spidey go way, way back.
I'm glad you have opinions about the movies. That's going to make this podcast a whole lot easier.
Oh, yeah. I've got a lot of opinions about all of the movies. So bring it on.
And with that, let's get right into it. Now that everybody's riled up for this story, I feel like attacking something. Let's get right into Spider-Man Homecoming review. But first, let's listen to a clip.
What's up, guys? Wait a minute. You guys aren't the real Avengers. I can tell Hulk gives it away. Oh, that was awesome.
Did Liz get a new top? No, we've seen that before. Never with that skirt.
She probably stopped staring before it gets creepy, though.
Too late. You guys are losers.
So, to become an Avenger, are there, like, trials or an interview?
Just don't do anything I would do. And definitely don't do anything I wouldn't do. There's a little gray area in there, and that's where you operate.
Oh.
All right?
That's not a hug. I'm just grabbing the door for you.
All right, kid. Good luck out there.
I'm feeling rough. I'm feeling wrong.
Listen, I know school sucks.
Peter, you still with us?
Yeah.
I know you want to save the world, but... You're not ready yet.
You're the Spider-Man.
No, I'm not. This is just a costume. This is...
You're on the ceiling.
Stay close to the ground. And stay out of trouble. Forget the flying monster guy. There are people who handle this sort of thing.
I'm sick of him treating me like a kid all the time.
But you are a kid.
This is my chance to prove myself.
Peter, what is going on with you?
I'm really sorry. I'm so busy. I'm slammed.
Don't mess with me. Because I will kill you and everybody you love.
And that was a clip from Spider-Man Homecoming, starring Tom Holland and as Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and also Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man Tony Stark. Guys, we're going to launch right into this.
Wait, no. You got to go back. We can't cite Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark and leave out maybe the best actor in this whole thing, Michael Keaton as the Vulture.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Like, how could you forget Batman's in this movie? How does Batman get into a Marvel movie?
I forgot him because his character is so utterly forgettable.
Oh, snap. How do you not like a movie that stars Michael Keaton? Michael Keaton could just sit there and drink coffee all day, and it would be the best movie ever.
If it starred Michael Keaton, this would have been better, as Spider-Man, I think. No, actually, Tom Hanks.
You know, I actually have these comic books. They were released, like, way back, I think, in the late 90s. I found them at, like, a garage bin. And I'm not even sure who published these books. I think it was a partnership with Marvel and DC, but they took the Marvel superheroes and the DC superheroes and they merged them. So I think they merged Spider-Man with Batman. I can't remember the actual
Spider-Man
character.
Merged with Superboy.
With Superboy, right. Who did Batman merge with?
Wolverine.
Wolverine? Okay.
I shouldn't know this because it's just the weirdest 90s-est period in all of comic bookdom, and I don't know how these companies got along for it, but it produced like some fun 90s action-y comics, but at the same time so much of it is hot garbage that's just so excessive it's out of control.
Yeah, I actually have all of them somewhere in my closet, but anyways,
that's insane.
Everything comes full circle with hot garbage.
Can we just talk about Michael Keaton for like an hour and forget about the movie?
Yeah, can we talk about Birdman, which is essentially a spoof of clearly, right? Is this a case of art imitating life or imitating art, something like that?
Art imitating life.
All right, we probably should get into at least a basic thoughts on the movie. I think you can pretty much pick out mine, but I'll get into specifics later.
Wait a minute. You forgot to mention the star of the film, Jennifer Connelly, as Karen. Just saying. She's the best.
What?
She's the best. Karen was the best. She was the best character. You don't get to see her, but she's the best character.
Oh, she was the voice.
She was the voice.
Yeah.
Oh,
man, I didn't even think about
that. By the way, in real life, she's married to What's-His-Face, who plays Vision, right?
Paul Bettany.
Yeah, so who actually does the voice of Vision, which is really weird. So we have two voice actors. Well, not voice actors, but they're providing voice work in this specific case for these Marvel movies, and they're actually married in real life. So what if in the movie, in the Marvel universe, Jennifer Connelly's character actually meets his character and they get married? Just saying. Anyhow... Back to the
fans
movie.
Would throw a fit because Vision marries Scarlet Witch.
They'd
fans
be a superpower
lose their mind.
God damn it. It's too bad Mary Jane's on in this movie, right?
Right.
That isn't Mary Jane, guys. It's not Mary Jane. I'm sorry.
It's not. I think they've actually said that. But,
yeah. Kevin Feige, or however you pronounce
it. His name is pronounced Feige.
Okay.
The showrunner for the Marvel TV series that essentially all the movies are.
The guy that makes way too much money for making the same movie over and over, yeah.
Yes, who makes sure everything is shot in the way that a television series is. Like, no director can ever put their stamp on it. Anyway, okay. We'll get into all that.
You guys are a little too pretentious when it comes to Marvel movies.
Hey.
You go in, you have fun, people do a good job acting like superheroes, and you leave with a smile. That's what you go for, that's what you leave with.
We can get to like what you can expect a lot more out of superhero movies. There have been some really good ones in the past. We can get to a discussion on that later for
right,
sure.
But before we do it, I just want to say that I actually like Marvel movies. Usually I do like Marvel movies. I actually like Ant-Man and Iron Man 2, movies that people hate. I'm not as crazy about Marvel movies as some people are.
But this is on the better side of the spectrum. Like, Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3 and Ant-Man are like lesser films. I would say this is up there with, like, closer to, not directly tied with, Winter Soldier and the original Guardians,
oh,
like the better side of things.
They don't even belong in the same sentence as Winter Soldier. Like, neither one of those two movies.
Okay, but Winter Soldier came out of nowhere and was like a spy espionage movie and not a superhero movie, so...
Yes.
We're going to have to start with Tim because he's the most positive. But before Tim, before you tell us why you love this movie, I just want to say my biggest problem with this movie, and this is why it's going to be really hard for me to review it, and something I've been complaining about for about 3 to 4 weeks now, is I saw all of the highlights in the hundreds of trailers and teasers and movie clips that they've provided for us online during, like, my favorite TV shows when I go to the movie and I can't help but not see these things. And so my problem with this movie is, honest to God, I just kind of felt like I saw 50% of the movie, especially the best parts, prior to seeing the movie. And that's a huge problem.
There was a twist that actually got me. And I thought that it was probably the best part of the whole movie. Just the acting on that, in that particular scene. There's some people in a car. I thought that's when the movie was.
You know, like, there's that was like a classic twist.
Coming from the director who directed Cop Car, one of my favorite films of last year, it's no secret that the best scene in this film takes place in a car.
In a car. And there's a lot of cool sort of like camera work that goes with it. They're at a red light, and as soon as someone begins to understand someone else's spider secret, then the light turns green.
You can spoil the movie.
Yeah. All right. First, why don't we give us like a general impression first? Let's start off with those general impressions. So we'll get into spoilers like maybe in the second half of the podcast. But general impressions, Tim. You obviously like this movie.
I do like the movie. I've been kind of walking the spider web, trying to decide where this falls in the spectrum of Spider-Man movies. And I don't think it is the best one. I think it's kind of close, but it's not the best Spider-Man movie. I think Spider-Man 2 is still a superior movie, not a superior Spider-Man, because that's Doc Ock, to anyone that knows anything. But, you know, there are some parts of this movie that I think were so absolutely right that I can't help but enjoy the movie. Like, I feel like Peter Parker and Spider-Man were exactly what I wanted out of Peter Parker and Spider-Man. The Vulture, this is the coolest he's ever been, and I actually empathized with the character. At the beginning of the movie, I was like, yeah, go Vulture, I'm on your side for now. And that really means something, you guys know, that really means something in a Marvel movie, where the majority of the time the villain is just there to fight the good guy. Literally, no reason to exist. They're just like, hey, I'm gonna fight you now. So to actually have a villain that I liked, didn't get enough screen time, I really liked that. Was the movie perfect? No. Did they spend way too much time pushing the MCU? Absolutely. Like, you can only take so much Robert Downey Jr. in a movie that's not Avengers and not Iron Man. But aside from that, I thought they did a pretty good job bringing us the latest Spider-Man and actually shoving it into the MCU. So I think they deserve credit.
Rick, how do you respond to that?
Well, I've already told you guys that my biggest problem with the movie is I felt like the highlights were spoiled for me with the trailers and teasers, which impacts my viewing of the movie. So I like the movie. You're right, Tim. Spider-Man 2 is by far the superior film. It's probably still the best film in the Marvel Universe, even though technically Sony made it. But you know what I'm saying. Sam Raimi is just a gifted filmmaker, and he pulled off like a miracle making that movie under a Hollywood studio. And as everyone knows, when it came to Part 3, there was a lot of studio interference, and that was a hot mess. Spider-Man 2, best Spider-Man movie, hands down. However, I'm a huge fan of Tobey Maguire. As anyone who's listened to this podcast for like years and years knows, I love Tobey Maguire. But I think Tom Holland is a better Peter Parker. I think what this movie has going for it is Tom Holland and his performance. Also because in the movie, he's playing a 15-year-old, which is great because even when Tobey Maguire played the role of Spider-Man, although, again, that movie's superior, he was, I think, 26 when he made the movie, and I think he was
playing... Oh, no, he was like 30 when he did the first one.
Okay, well, hey, he was...
He was up there. Garfield was like 26 or 27, but Tobey
but his... was 30. But his character in that movie was slightly older. Like, he was... I mean, I'm not from the States, so, like, here in Montreal, like, we graduate at 17 and then we go to college. But I think in the States, when you're, like, 18, 19, you're still in high school, right?
No, 18 is usually when people graduate. 18,
yeah. Okay. Well, he's playing a high school kid, but clearly he looks older, is older. This kid's, like, 15. And I think Tom Holland's casting is a real plus. I think that's why I enjoyed the movie. I just loved watching his performance. I thought he had a lot of chemistry with just about everyone on set, including Michael Keaton. You're right, the scene that takes place in the car is by far the highlight of the film. I wish we could have seen more scenes like that. But what I like about his character, it's not even so much his performance, but it's the way his character is written, which I think is the only thing the screenplay writers, the six, by the way, six, count them, six, the sinister six.
The committee, you should call
them. The sinister six of screenwriters. I think the only thing they really got right, like, I mean, like, really, they did a really good job on is the way they wrote his character, because he's gawky, he's anxious, he's like a deer caught in headlights. He's got this like teen innocence, and what I like about his character is he actually feels like he's in danger throughout the whole entire film, of which he is. I mean, there's an entire scene which is iconic. It specifically mirrors one of the most famous like images from the classic Spider-Man comics, when Spider-Man's trapped under rubble that just kind of like exploded and fell on him, right? And so we get that specific image in the movie. He's crying out for help. Like, I mean, this kid actually cries. He feels pain. He's scared. And we do get a bit of that with Tobey Maguire's portrayal of Spider-Man, but not as much as we do here. So I like the fact that he's still learning how to harness his powers. Like, I'm not just talking about like the super Spider-Man suit that he gets from Tony Stark. Like, he's learning how to, I guess, use the suit, which comes equipped with a gazillion, I think it's like 578 different spider webs and all kinds of like gimmicks, right? But he's learning how to use not just his powers, but the actual suit. So I like the fact that he feels like he's in danger. I like the fact that he actually gets hurt. I like the fact that a good portion of this movie, and I would say the better part of the film, feels like a John Hughes film. And I mean, the director of the movie actually said that one of his biggest influences while making Spider-Man Homecoming was the movies of John Hughes. I could have used a bit more John Hughes and a lot less MCU, because the thing that I find annoying about all these movies, which we've talked about on and on and on throughout, I don't know, how many years has it been now since they've made Iron Man? Like 8?
2007.
Yeah. 10? Is the fact that I find they focus so much on building the Marvel Cinematic Universe as opposed to, say, focusing on telling just one great standalone story. So all of the scenes in which, like, we get introduced to all of these characters, Robert Downey Jr. makes like 20,000 cameo appearance, has this Captain America, et cetera, it was just like, it was too much for no reason. And all of that screen time could have really been used to sort of give us more backstory on, for example, the Vulture, and put Michael Keaton at the center of this film, because he didn't feel like the center of the film. And it's Michael Keaton! Like, he's amazing!
He was barely there, really. And they gave him no role to sink his teeth into whatsoever. All right, so you touched upon why I think this is... It's hard for me to even refer to this as a movie. I don't really think... Of all the Marvel, you know, MCU movies that are out there, this is ranks down like as one of the worst ones for me, because it doesn't even try to have a standalone story right from the very opening. Just the very opening shot, it is dependent on you having seen Civil War. It's depending on you seeing other movies. It doesn't bother telling you who Spider-Man is or setting up a situation at all. And I know we're all sick of origin stories, blah, 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 but they are essentially relaunching a franchise here. And if you're some kid who had no idea who Spider-Man was, and this is your first introduction to this character, you're going to be as confused as hell. This movie is not for just normal audiences. This is for Marvel audiences purely. And it just felt to me like an episode in a TV show. It started well before this movie, and it's going to go on long after this movie, and nothing was really resolved. And it doesn't do anything. It doesn't ever set up Peter's life. It doesn't really write him as a character. Tom Holland, you're right, does a fantastic job with what he's given. He gives it his all, man. And I give him all the credit in the world for making this as likable as it is, because for as much as I kind of despise how this movie was made, it does have that characteristic Marvel charm. They know how to do sort of oddball mainstream humor, because it's not really that weird, but it's sort of mainstream weird humor. They got that down to a science. Like, they totally understand that. And their action scenes are just by the book. Like, whatever. They're all fine, right? There's a certain production value that comes with seeing a Marvel movie. And this movie has that in many respects, at least as far as the filmmaking goes. As far as the writing goes, it's one of the worst ones they've ever done. And that's no surprise, given that there are six screenwriters. That is a horrible sign. I've never seen that many screenwriters attached to a movie before. It tells you there is no vision, and this movie has no vision. It basically goes from action scene to action scene. It's all one big rush. It barely spends any time in school, and the school scenes have absolutely zero relevance upon anything.
It's actually a fair criticism, and I can't disagree, but it's kind of hard for, like, I've met director John Watts. He was at the Fantasia Film Festival last year, and they already announced that he was making, like, Spider-Man, so, you know, it was, like, a big thing, and he's a really cool guy. He really loves Spider-Man. He knows the comic books really well, and, like, he couldn't really talk about the movie, but he did say it's kind of tough making a movie like Spider-Man, because not only is it, like, epic and expensive, but they've already rebooted the franchise with the Andrew Garfield character, right? And then he has the Sam Raimi movies to which this film is going to be compared to, and those movies are fantastic. At least the first and the second one are. That's, like, you know, a huge bar to meet. And so there's a lot of pressure on him. And the thing is, it's like, again, it's a fair criticism, but I kind of, like, have to defend John Watts, because he is the director and he has to take the screenplay and make the best of what he can with that screenplay. And they clearly weren't going to give us the origin story, because we've already seen it. So they sidestep Uncle Ben getting murdered. They sidestep, like, him getting bit by the spider. All of that stuff that we've seen in the first 45 minutes of the original two Spider-Man films, like, we don't see in this film.
But we didn't need it in the Sam Raimi movies. Like, Spider-Man is such a part of the public's, like, thoughts that you can just say, hey, where did Spider-Man come from? And everyone would be like, radioactive spider, Uncle Ben, Aunt May, Mary Jane. Like, people know this stuff.
People our age, sure, they do know this stuff. But there are plenty of people out there before who this will be their first Spider-Man.
I would assume that, too, except for there's still new Spider-Man shows. And they're always out there. Like, not aware of them, but they're still on TV.
That's the problem. That's why this isn't even a movie. All it is this thing that is connected to every other piece of media involved with Spider-Man. It's not a movie. It's just it's a bunch of images projected in a row that happen to go from point C to point D. It's not, there's no intro to this. There's no beginning, middle, and an end. This is just basically a nothing. It exists just to wow you with fireworks. They don't even bother trying to establish a character. When you've got, I mean, they don't bring up Uncle Ben, but they certainly reference him, and they expect you to know that. They expect you to know why Aunt May worries about Spider-Man. That kind of stuff.
I think
is
that's
crap.
Fair.
That's not
that's
good
fair.
Filmmaking. It's not not for a movie, Tim.
Okay,
it is fair for a TV show that's in episode 7.
But Patrick, what's Superman's weakness? Kryptonite. Everyone and their mom knows that. You don't need to talk about it anymore.
And Christopher Reeve's Superman introduces kryptonite as his weakness.
But that was the first movie, and it hadn't been relaunched 19 times already.
everybody knew Superman at that point, right? Like, you could still make the same argument. It had been relaunched several times. There was a TV series that was very popular. There had been old George Reeves Superman movies. It was a character that everybody knew, and the comics were super popular. But you know what? Richard Donner made a movie. He didn't make a universe, part of a universe, a cog in a machine, which is all that Spider-Man Homecoming is.
Which, by the way, Superman the movie is still the best superhero movie ever made. But
disagree wholeheartedly.
I think that movie's fantastic. But we're not going to talk about Superman the movie right now. But here's the thing. I'm going to meet you halfway, Patrick, because the thing is, I agree with you. And that's what I'm saying, is that this movie is still it's like it feels like its number one goal that it's trying to achieve is to expand the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And like Patrick said, it actually opens with this connection to the Avengers movies. And it ends connecting, like, the new villain that we're going to get in the future, which we can talk about soon.
No, I mean, it's not even trying to expand the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's that's a Spider-Man villain through and through, Scorpion. Spoiler.
Right, but the thing is, Scorpion is part of the Sinister Six, so it seems like Marvel wants to make the Sinister Six movies, so...
But that's, again, exclusively Spider-Man. Their one and only goal is to fight Spider-Man and team up on the guy and kill him.
Right, but they purposely included him at the very end of the film because they want to make that movie, and Sony's trying to make their own version of the Sinister Six, so clearly they're trying to find a way to make some kind of partnership with Sony. But anyways, it's not important. The point is that Patrick's kind of right, and we've been saying this on the podcast forever, and a lot of people have stated this and written about it. Like, they're fully focused more so on fleshing out and expanding the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's kind of sad because I just want to see a standalone story about this specific character. Where I disagree with Patrick is, I've been saying on the podcast for years and years, I'm like, why can't I just get, for example, a hard-boiled sort of like film noir detective story for Batman where we don't have to know anything about his past or his future or his enemies like the Joker or whatever. Just have this detective story that just so happens to star the Dark Knight. Like, I think that's great. I don't think you need the backstory. I don't think you need to explain to everyone his backstory. I think you can have a good standalone story and leave everything somewhat ambiguous or mysterious, or let people decide whatever it is they want to decide. Like, let them use their imagination to decide what this character's backstory is. I mean, lots of movies do that. The problem is that it is shoehorned into this opening and closing that connects it to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But again, the reason why I like this movie a lot is because of Tom Holland. Like, I'm sorry, his performance is just so good. And when I say he's the best Peter Parker, he's also the best Spider-Man, because I don't know if you've ever seen footage of him when he starred in Elton John's Billy Elliot. He was on the stage, like, he was part of the stage musical. He's like a real dancer. I mean, he's famous for going on like talk shows and even like dance shows and performing like doing the dance moves to Beyonce and Rihanna. Like, this kid is an athlete and he's a dancer and he's got this natural grace and he can move. And he actually performed 90% of his stunts. So this is a star performance given by a born actor. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen this kid in interviews. Sorry, I say kid. He's now 21 years old. But I don't know if you've ever seen him. I don't know if you've ever seen Tom Holland in interviews when he was like a little boy. I mean, the kid had a mind of like, you know, 40-year-old. He's like super, super intelligent. And I think I will also agree with Patrick that Marvel does do comedy right. And we did get it with the last Wonder Woman movie, thank God, when it comes to the DC universe. But he gets a lot of comedic mileage out of Parker's screw-ups. Like, especially like when he's trying to figure out how to use like the Spider-Man suit. So there's a certain charm to his character, and I really liked his best friend, Ned. You know, like, I would say the best scene in the movie is actually when Ned discovers his superpowers. Like, he discovers that he's Spider-Man, but the problem is, it was in the first trailer, and I saw it over and over and over again, and it's kind of a shame, because I thought that was, like, a really funny scene.
Yeah. I like that all the actors who played their parts, they didn't really give them much of a role. We're supposed to buy that Ned are great friends because they fist bump and they have the secret handshake. These are like just little tricks that prevent a writer from actually writing things. And I guess this is what I'm getting at, why I hate this kind of filmmaking so much. And Marvel is really changing filmmaking, is that they're taking character development out of the equation. And yes, they are providing you, again, you can be entertained by this movie. I'm not saying that you can't. It is kind of funny in certain parts, and the action is well done. It's well directed as far as it goes. But they have eliminated what used to be an actual story. This doesn't tell a story.
But I disagree. I agree that they are forcing the Marvel Cinematic Universe a little too hard, and consequently too many characters go underdeveloped. Like, even though Michelle was comic relief, the things she does in that movie are so unrelatable that part of me wants them to kill the character. I'm like, she's just strange to the point of I don't get her.
It was ridiculous. Like,
sitting in detention to draw sad people? That's not a thing humans do.
No, it's not. It's something that it's an oddball humor thing that's supposed to appeal to.
But what I will say before Ricky cuts in is that there is a lot of depth in certain characters. While I would have preferred drop Stark and let Peter relate to Aunt May because she has a lot she's going through, Peter got a lot of character development. And if you don't think so, just think about the entirety of the movie. He's literally just searching for a father figure. And what he gets is Tony Stark, who's a dick, and the Vulture, who's, you know, he's got a point, but he's just going about it the wrong way. And that is never, like, outright said in the movie. The filmmakers let you just glean this as you're watching it, that Peter Parker's uncle is dead. He's a 15-year-old kid, and he just wants to be part of a family. He wants a dad. He looks up to Iron Man as this, like, father figure for the Avengers. So there is
none of that. Peter never looked for a dad. He didn't seem to be concerned at all about a father figure the entire movie. I mean, you might relate. I think that's you are placing your own wanting to get more out of this movie than it really offers. But Peter's actions and his line never point to that whatsoever.
It is hyper-analyzing a cartoon character, for sure. I'll agree with that.
I mean, I'm not just the movie. Just the movie.
Peter never does a
single thing that he wants to be part of the Avengers because he wants to be grown up. But he never wants he never, like, actually cares about having a father figure. He doesn't seem sad at you know, Uncle Ben's loss because they never mention him or anything like that. In fact, he doesn't really seem to care that much about his family. Him and Aunt May never even have a familial relationship in this. She's just there. She's kind of, she's there to add a little bit of comic relief and to be referenced as the hot aunt. That's her entire character. They never have a quiet moment between the two.
Stark takes too much of that.
But that's no different than watching a John Hughes film that focuses on one specific character or two specific characters. I mean, this is a coming-of-age movie. Like, it's a coming-of-age story. And there is something special about the way the movie acknowledges and embraces the character's, like, teenage weaknesses, his vulnerabilities, his human error. I mean, this is a Spider-Man who can't yet drive a car. This is a Spider-Man who's still afraid of heights. This is a Spider-Man who cries, who feels pain. He has a lot to overcome, and I think as a coming-of-age story, it actually works because he has to learn how to balance these two lives. So I didn't need more of Aunt May or Uncle Ben or Flash or anybody. I just needed Spider-Man. And what we get of Tom Holland, I think it worked amazing. Like, I think they did I think the director, John Watts, did a really good job when the camera was focused on Peter Parker and his story of growing up, and that specific character played by Tom Holland. And the thing is, but here's the thing. You know, everybody wanted Donald Glover to be Spider-Man. Like, way back, there was that big controversy. Like, why can't a black actor be Spider-Man? Blah, 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 right? So he finds a clever way, or Marvel finds a clever way, to put Donald Glover into this movie. So Donald Glover plays a sleepy-eyed criminal. But if you know the comic book well enough, you know that he's actually playing the Prowler, right? And the Prowler, of course, is the uncle of
Miles Morales,
who eventually later becomes one of the Spider-Mans, the Black Spider-Man, Black Latino Spider-Man. And so, like, but the thing is, like, that's fine. Like, I'm all good with
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, so, and that's fine. Like, I'm okay with Easter eggs. You know, I mean, if there was Easter eggs in, like, DC movies way back in, like, the 80s. But I feel like a lot of these characters exist only for fan service. And that is a problem. So, like, the studio basically has a formula. And when they set out to make these movies, they have a specific formula that they need to follow, and they need a specific amount of action scenes, a specific amount of Easter eggs, a specific amount of, like, post-credit scenes, a specific amount of this and that. And that is sort of, like, a problematic and repetitive, and it's to the point now where I know exactly where the movie is headed, beat by beat. But I will say one thing, Patrick. Okay, I've complained about the third act for, like, the last 17 podcasts, even with Guardians of the Galaxy. And I got to tell you, I kind of really dig the third act in this movie, because I don't really care about the big action sequence that takes place in the sky when Spider-Man has to find a way to stop Vulture from pulling a heist and stealing Tony Stark's like airplane, his invisible jet. You know, it's fine. It's an action sequence. I'm cool. I don't have a problem with it. That's not like my highlight. I just love the way the movie actually ended, when he actually had a face off against Vulture, and he actually kind of technically got defeated. I mean, Vulture defeated himself. Yeah. If he didn't actually like explode, then like he would have just kicked his ass. He would have walked away most likely killing and or at least defeating Spider-Man. And I liked the exchange between his character and Michael Keaton's character. There was something about the ending that I liked. I liked the way it was shot. I liked the way Spider-Man was beat into a bloody pulp, and he was surrounded by like the fire, and just like it was just beautifully photographed. Like, there's something I love about the ending of this movie.
Well, and the character's true nature has come out in that final sequence where Peter's beaten. And the Vulture doesn't finish him. The Vulture goes for what he came for. He goes for the arc reactors, the things that are worth billions of dollars, whatever. He's going for that. He's not going for the kill. That was never his intention. He kind of looks at Peter as this kid that his daughter relates to, that his daughter knows. He has no interest really in killing Peter. He wants him to get off his back to stop stopping him, I guess. But that's not why he's there. And Peter, in the final moments, is trying to warn him, is trying to save this guy who doesn't want to be saved, who just wants to be let alone. And I thought that was really, really telling of both characters.
Yeah, I didn't see him as that. I mean, and the way my viewing was, he did want to kill Peter. He would have been happy to kill Peter, but his suit was broken down at that point, too. Let's not forget, Vulture didn't have the upper hand at that point. He had been bashed to pieces as well. And I think at that point, he was just cutting and running. It wasn't some. He had tried to kill Peter several times already and would have been perfectly happy killing him. He had made that very clear, too, as well. You can read that into it if you want, but the reading I got, like, Vulture was definitely not at the peak of his powers when that scene happened, and he was just getting out of there with whatever he could get out of there with, just like he had cut and run in the very beginning, salvaging his situation, so to speak. His character is just another one in a long line of disappointing characters in this movie whose motivations are completely ridiculous and unfounded. He got screwed over by the government, so he becomes a mass murderer and has no problem with that whatsoever. Okay. He keeps saying something about – no, wait a second. He keeps saying something about how he needs to help his family. Meanwhile, he's living in a mansion. Like, yeah, your family was really in danger. I expected them to be some sort of poor or have some problem that he needed But this is my point, Tim. They never show any of that stuff. You can infer all you want about characters, but as a movie, it is absolutely giving you nothing. It's giving you nothing. No character development. Zero. You're not showing why I should feel sorry for him. Why? Because he lost out on one job. That was it. He lost out on a job. So therefore,
he deserved more screen time than Tony Stark, and it should have focused on him far more. The Dark Knight is such a good movie because the Joker got so much screen time. But look at the source material. No. Look at the source material. Look at the original Vulture and tell me that this isn't 10 times better than that. The original Vulture is poor and wants to be rich. It's based on a comic book. You have to acknowledge that. You cannot say this is a movie. This is a comic book movie. There's a huge difference. This is not going for an Oscar. This is the problem with
comic book movies. The attitude that this is not a movie, it's a comic book movie. Therefore, no standards need apply. It can be as shitty as it needs to be.
Your audience. You know what these people care about in terms of cinematography? Fuck nothing, dude. They don't care. Who directed this? They don't care.
This is a problem.
We don't care.
So we'll throw garbage at these people because they'll eat anything. That's kind of what you're telling me right there.
They eat it up and love it.
And that's what they did. They threw garbage at us, and it's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars. Whereas there have been artistic comic movies that had a vision. Richard Donner's Superman has a vision. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man has a vision behind it. This has nothing. This is empty calories. It's just slop in the trough for the pigs to feed at. That's all it is.
You can't call it empty calories when you already acknowledge that this is probably the best Peter Parker / Spider-Man.
I didn't say that. That was you guys. that said that.
Okay, you have to acknowledge it. Name
no,
one.
No, I don't. Tobey Maguire, hands down, beats the Spider-Man. I give Tom Holland all the...
I'm gonna make you watch the emo scene of the third one over again. It ruins the entire trilogy.
No, but okay, hold on a second. I got to defend Tobey Maguire. You can't bring that up. Okay, the third movie was big-time studio interference. They ruined Sam Raimi's vision.
Okay, I agree. Yeah. I 100% agree. But the acting in that role is not perfect. I feel like he's a really good Peter Parker. His Spider-Man leaves a little something to be, you know, it's not all the way there. He's stiff. He's kind of awkward in the suit.
The problem with Tobey Maguire's casting is he was older than the role he took. Tobey Maguire is fantastic in that movie. I've already said I'm like the biggest fan of Tobey Maguire. The thing is, here they've made a movie about a 15-year-old kid, and they started a 19-year-old kid when they started making the movie. So there's a 4-year difference, but Tom Holland looks like he's 15. So it works, and it works better, like I said, because of, you know, he used to be a dancer, and he's into sports, and he just moves better, and he actually performs his own stunts, and he's charismatic, and he fits the role better. That's a matter of great casting. Tobey Maguire was great casting also, but let's face it, he was older than the character he's playing. But the thing is, here's the thing, like, oh God, I like, because I'm in between both of you. I like this movie. I do like this movie. I do not like it nearly as much as the Sam Raimi films. But the thing is, like, I guess, see, I think Patrick's being super harsh, but put that aside. The thing is, he's kind of right, and a lot of people say this.
You have to, at some point, you have to look at something where, like Rotten Tomatoes. I don't care if you like it or dislike it. You need to look at it. Acknowledge that it is the 8th most popular superhero movie ever made right now, and admit that maybe you're wrong. And I'll agree.
That
maybe
I'm
wrong.
We can't get into a discussion of Rotten Tomatoes value.
But Patrick, you need to just like cool your jets. It's a movie based on a comic book that came after two other sets of movies. Like at some point, you need to throw someone like give them a break. It's not Sam Raimi's movie. It's not 2001 anymore. Like. It can't be that original.
You don't give people a break. that's a ridiculous concept.
I think the reason why Sam Raimi's movie works so well, A, because Sam Raimi is just like a gifted filmmaker, but also because in the year 2000, when he released Spider-Man and made that movie, there wasn't a formula. Like, it was just kind of like, we're going to trust you to make this movie. We got a pretty tight screenplay. We got great casting. Go and make the movie. Much like the way they made the early Superman movie starring Christopher Reeve. And, you know, even to some degree when Christopher Nolan was making his Batman films. But you gotta like, regardless if you like this, and Tim, I like this movie. I do like this movie. But regardless if you like it or dislike it, you got to admit that these Marvel movies feel packaged like a fast food menu. There is a menu here. There's specific things that they want in the movie. And I can't help but feel that John Watts, which, you know, he's clearly a talented filmmaker. I kind of feel like 50% of this movie is what he wanted to do, and 50% of this movie is what he had to do. Now, the thing is, there's still a lot of things I gotta mention that I like about this movie. For example, I like the opening credit sequence and the closing credit sequence, and I know that sounds weird for me to bring this up, but I think there's like an art into like credit sequences. You know, there's a whole specific website that just like analyzes credit sequences, right? I love the opening credit sequence specifically because they use a version of the original theme song from a 1960s cartoon written by Bob Harris, right? I also like the closing because they use Ramones, and Ramones, of course, famously did the Spider-Man song, but also just because of the way it was laid out. Like, I like the animation. Like, I love just, I don't know, like, just the whole montage. It looked fantastic. I also do, okay, I like Marissa Tomei. She's like, fantastic actress. Love this woman. I'm not entirely sure how I feel about her as Aunt May, but here's the thing. So going back to what you said, Tim, like it's a comic book movie. It's based on a comic book. This is the original source material. The thing is I don't need my movies to be exactly like the comic books. In fact, I kind of like prefer it when they at least try to do something different. So I don't necessarily need someone like Aunt May to look exactly like her character in the comic book. In this movie, they don't make her look like Rosemary Harris. You know, like Rosemary Harris was perfect for the Spider-Man Sam Raimi film. I think if you got Rosemary Harris in this movie, it just wouldn't work. It would be so jarring. Like her casting would be so weird. Even with Sally Field, like she was in the Mark Webb films. She was actually good. She's great. I kind of feel like Marissa Tomei actually fits in this movie.
I mean, you say that I'm calling for like perfect representation, and I'm not. I don't want it to match the source material. That's the reason that I hated Watchmen so much as a movie, because I was like, wow, way to take something panel for panel and come up with nothing unique. I'm not asking for that. But what I am saying is that, like, to stay true to character and to Spider-Man, it can't be just, like, him with the Avengers and him sometimes at school and him sometimes fighting crime. Like, Peter Parker is constantly juggling, like, work, school, friends, and family on top of being a superhero. And, like, that is what makes the character so unique, is that he's forced into adulthood before he's ready.
I guess my point is none of that happens in this movie. You get that with the Sam Raimi movies. You do not get that in this movie. He doesn't.
And I would agree. That's the weakest point of the movie. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying, like, the way it makes you are saying that this is utter trash that's not worth watching. I'm saying it's really fun. It's really fun to watch. And it does a good job capturing Peter Parker and Spider-Man. It's not like the perfect adaptation of a Spider-Man movie. I think Spider-Man 1 and 2 do a better job because they are truer to form. That is a Spider-Man story, and everything a Spider-Man story should be. Is he worried about Aunt May? Yes. Good. Is he fighting a supervillain? Is he juggling a love life? And is he working and doing school on top of it? That is a compact Spider-Man movie as it should be. And this loses a lot of that, and it's 100% because of Marvel Universe. I agree. Wholeheartedly.
So here's the thing. So when we reviewed Wonder Woman, I think we were far more positive on Wonder Woman, although some of us still had problems with the film. But here's the thing. So when we reviewed that movie, I kind of like pitched my version of the movie. And now, if I directed this movie, hear me out, Tim, okay? If I directed this movie, I would have done something similar, minus all the Avengers. You would not see Avengers, okay? You would have this coming-of-age story about this kid living in Queens named Peter Parker, and he's got his best friend Ned, and it would focus a lot on that friendship because I thought those two characters were great on screen at the same time, great chemistry. But I would have also made it somewhat of like a detective slash heist film, where because he's learning to be a superhero, and then you got the Vulture who's pulling heists, right? And at one point it does turn into like a heist film. So why couldn't they have just made a Spider-Man film where he's like the small time, like, I guess, superhero fighting these small-time criminals, and the whole entire film he's just trying to track down Vulture, and eventually we do, you know, he does find out who Vulture is. We do get that twist, which was, you know, clever. I liked it. But just, like, scale it down. That's all I'm saying, guys. Scale it down. Forget the Avengers. Forget the Incredible Hulk. We don't need 20 scenes of Captain America. Just scale it down and, like, focus on an actual, like, good story and this character, because we all come to the movie to see Spider-Man. And the thing is, this is what pisses me off about Marvel. Man, Marvel, like, Spider-Man films and Marvel films will make money, okay? And I don't understand why, A, they have to ruin the whole entire film in their advertising campaign, but also, why can't they just have confidence in just not making it so big all the time? They did the exact same thing with Guardians of the Galaxy, like, the third act of the last movie.
They literally have to guard the galaxy in everything they do. That's the point of the crew. I was so mad at you during that podcast because you kept saying that. And I was like, their fucking name is Guardians of the Galaxy. What are you saying? But no, I agree. I am with you all the way, Rick, where Spider-Man is supposed to be sort of small time. The Avengers are very much a part of Peter Parker's life, but it's subtle, right? Like, he does not have to see Tony Stark every 5 minutes. They could have had Peter look at his phone and had a text message with Tony and been like, hey, you guys need help? And Tony respond,
or something. They don't even need that. We've already
but
seen
it. But they have to tie it in. What people want.
No, they don't. No, they don't. That's the point that Patrick and I are trying to make. They do not have to tie it in to the Avengers by specifically including these characters and scenes into the movie, which takes up screen time and does nothing to actually flesh out these characters and story. They don't. Everybody knows Spider-Man's in the same universe. If you eliminate all of the Avengers cameos and everything to do with the Avengers movies and all the other movies that have to do with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you would have an additional 45 minutes to work with.
Rick, if you were on the Marvel team and you finally got your boy Spidey back, you would want to celebrate. You would want to show it off. And that's what's at stake here, is they need to make it inherently clear that this is one universe. And all things considered, was it over, like, way too heavy-handed? Yes. Was it annoying that it was so heavy-handed? Yes. I wanted it to be subtle. But the fact that they made a story out of it, I think to some extent, that's clever. Did I feel like someone was, like, pointing a gun at the director's head saying you have to do this? Yeah, probably. But the fact that he ran with it and did such a good job with that huge limitation, that huge barrier to overcome, I thought he did exceptionally with that. I agree. It should be Spider-Man.
It should be
Spider-Man, but it fucking won't ever be. Okay, like get over it. It's part of a cinematic universe. They're gonna make it a cinematic universe. It's what it is.
The cinematic universe is what I'm railing against as well, and I think Spider-Man is the most egregious example of that, maybe since Civil War at least, which also I think
But you have to accept that it is what it is, and they're going to keep doing it.
No, see, Tim, that's the thing. I don't have to accept it because it's film criticism, right? We're supposed to be able to criticize a movie.
Did you pay for a movie ticket?
Yeah, I did.
And you've already supported it.
I know I did, and now I'm. But I don't understand what you mean by that. But I obviously I supported it financially, and now I'm free to speak my mind about it as well, which is to criticize it because it is being run like a TV show would be, where you bring in various directors, but none of them are allowed to do anything. It's all under the show's control, and so we don't ever see anything creative. There's nothing creative happening in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is just a product. And that's fair game in movie world. Like, this is not what we should be expecting out of movies. We should be expecting passion out of these movies. We should be expecting people who love these characters. I don't even get the sense that Marvel loves these characters. I get the sense that they're just trying to rush them out as fast as possible. They want Spider-Man to join the Avengers world so fast because that's what's going to make them more money. That's what's going to get him in the workforce and start being an earner. That's what they want from him.
For them, it is money. But for fans, we want that too. And so,
either. It's not their passion. Sam Raimi, you could tell he had a love for this character. I don't get that from hardly any of the Marvel movies, that the makers behind the movie actually care about these creations and are making the movie because they love the stories.
The thing is, they're making these movies. Like this is a comic book company, Marvel, right? They're making these movies the way they make their comic books. And so they're trying to adapt that medium to a different medium. And to be fair, it's somewhat interesting because no one's done it before. Like, I don't think anyone's tried to create a cinematic universe prior to Marvel. And so the way they design the movies, it's no different than comic books. Like, in a comic book, you get a character that shows up and it connects to this character who's from a different comic book, and why do they do this? Because they want you to buy as many comic books as you can, right? Like, they want you to buy as many Marvel comic books as you can, so they have to interconnect everything. That's the business side of things. Tim, you're also forgetting that I said, like, multiple times I like this movie. Okay.
No, and I get that. I just feel like you guys are rallying against the cinematic universe a little bit too hard when, like, there's nothing you can do to stop it at this point. It is what it is.
But why would that stop anybody from rallying against it?
If I watch this movie before I saw Wonder Woman, I might actually like it a lot more. But after seeing Wonder Woman, I'm like, that movie didn't really try to do anything, really, to connect to DC. I mean, like, the rest of the movies. Like, we get one photograph, sure. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, the way they handled the references in the DC cinematic universe, it wasn't hammered into your face. Like, they actually focused on this character. And by the way, Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm sorry, but, like, the dude is, like, the king of an egg planet. He turns into, like, a giant blob, and it's, like, just big, this big CGI mess. Like, the first two acts of that movie is beautiful, and you get to the third act, and once again, they decide that they need this villain. It's going to destroy the whole entire universe, and you get this, like, nonsensical, like, action CGI, like, set piece that is just not interesting to watch. Where, you know, like, the best part of this movie, like, with the best parts of this movie is, like, the car sequence, the exchange between Michael Keaton and Tom Holland's character in the car, the scene in which Ned discovers that Peter is Spider-Man, the scene in which Spider-Man's running through, like, a field.
The Ferris Bueller scene.
Those are the best scenes in this movie. And it's, like, about time that fucking Marvel realizes that that's all we need and good characters.
And I agree with you, and that's why I disagree with Patrick, which sounds insane, but I would say that it's clear that there is passion in this project when there were so many great moments that truly captured Spider-Man. When Peter is lifting off all of that concrete on top of him, it was a direct citation to one of the best comics that Spider-Man's ever been in.
But it also worked in the story. It did both.
See, and I see that as just a tribute to fans. Like, there's a difference between passion for the character and just passion for, you know, or basically filming this thing for the fans, knowing that fans will get a kick out of this. And yes, obviously they're Marvel, so they have a extensive background in Spider-Man. And it's not that Marvel can't make a good movie. That's what's ultimately disappointing to me about this Spider-Man, is that Marvel has made actually good movies. I thought Logan was an excellent example of a real movie that somehow came out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, it is sort of the Marvel. I don't know. I don't think X-Men. I don't know if they're completely connected
Fox,
to this.
Fox, it's not separate. Marvel. It's
oh,
Fox.
That's Fox. Oh, well, there you go. See, well, Winter Soldier. Then, I'll give it to Winter Soldier, which I think is an amazing movie. But
at the same time, you have X-Men Apocalypse on the other hand, right there, where Fox is clearly trying to do the same thing. And it's already, like, making those movies worse as a result.
Yes,
so
exactly. So those are just, to me, like what this Spider-Man was. They're just utter nothing. They're kind of just worthless. And again, now let me this is going to sound really weird, but I didn't hate myself watching this movie. It's only after I think about it later, when I think about where I knew I didn't like, you know, completely wasn't on board with it. I knew it had zero story and it had zero substance whatsoever. But again, Marvel is so good at just sort of providing that comfort food it is funny at times, and it does have some great nostalgia scenes, like the Ferris Bueller thing. That's a good, you know, a good nostalgia scene for people our age. Maybe not for people who've never seen Ferris Bueller before and won't get the reference, but whatever, I liked it. It's easy to watch. These are super easy to watch, just like fast food is really easy to eat.
Hey, you use my fast food analogy.
I'm taking your fast food analogy, but after you've digested that food, you feel sick afterwards, and that's what I feel about this Spider-Man movie.
Okay, well, I have a question for Tim and or Patrick. Okay, when you think of the Spider-Man movies, not the comic book, the Spider-Man movies, what is the most iconic scene in any of the Spider-Man films?
The train scene in Spider-Man 2.
Wrong. Try again.
I was also going to pick Spider-Man 2, but I kind of like...
It's the kiss, guys. It's the kiss.
That's what I was... Oh, that...
No, that... I was going to say the conversation in the second movie about back in 2002, Ricky. You were dating yourself. As soon as Spider-Man 2 came out, no one cared about Spider-Man anymore. I would say the train scene trumps it now.
I was going to say the conversation about the kiss in Spider-Man 2.
I think, well, okay, that too, but I think, but that still connects to the kiss. I think, in honest to God, like, the kiss. Like, most people, like, if you showed them a screenshot of the train sequence and you showed them a screenshot of the kiss, everybody knows where the kiss came from, what movie, what actors. The train sequence could be anything. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because in this movie, Karen actually references the most iconic scene, at least in my opinion, of any Spider-Man film, which is the kiss from the original Spider-Man film. The point I'm trying to make here is, as much as I like this movie, Tim, I left the movie theater thinking that there isn't one iconic, truly outstanding scene in this film that belongs to this film and is not connected to anything else.
Which is a shame, because this is such a great character, and they just didn't do enough. This is like one of their flagship guys. I could get by with this with Ant-Man. Like, that's fine. Ant-Man's not something I really even know about, and I'm okay with that just being a fluff movie. But I expect more out of Spider-Man. I expect more out of the bigger franchises, and I did not get that with this.
I wish I was around for an Ant-Man discussion with you guys, because I was the polar opposite, where I just, like, hammered on that movie because I love Edgar Wright so much as an artist. That I was furious that I never got to see what he intended out of that movie.
And do you know why? They didn't want to make an Edgar Wright movie. They wanted to make a Marvel movie.
Is I agree with you guys almost 100%. I agree. The MCU took out of this movie. If they had just been able to focus on all of the other characters, if they had just been able to focus on Peter and his life and not worried about the Avengers or any of that, there would have been a better movie made, which is why I'm not saying this is better than Spider-Man 1 or 2. But I am saying stop taking it out on the movie that it's part of a cinematic universe. That's all I'm saying, Patrick, is, like, I feel like you went in and you're like, oh, this is part of a cinematic universe. This movie is garbage.
No, I had high hopes.
In your review, you totally ignored performances. You ignored almost every aspect of the filmmaking and just talked about how much you hate cinematic universes.
I did not totally, by the way, I wrote the review for this. I did not ignore performances. I specifically call out Tom Holland. I have a whole paragraph devoted to how great he was in this movie. As far as everybody else, they could have been replaced by name said actor, and they would have been
Sorry, but Karen cannot be replaced. She was amazing.
Maybe not the voice of the spider suit. You're right. That's about it. All right, we gotta wrap up pretty soon here though, so we're gonna get some final thoughts on this. Tim, final thoughts, final defense of this movie.
Okay, I think that this is one of the best portrayals of Peter Parker. I think it is a fairly faithful adaptation of the comics, and it comes with a level of cheese. But it is worth noting that it does feel a lot more like current comics, where everything is an event now. Everything's an event comic, which means that everything is cameos, and it feels like there could be more love shown if they had just focused on one hero and one project at a time. That said, I'm really, really excited about where the universe is going. Is this the best Spider-Man movie? No, but I think that I would put it much closer to Raimi's 1 and 2 and on the opposite side of everything from the Garfield movies, which I still think are hot garbage.
I never saw the Garfield movies.
Don't.
But the animation looked terrible.
Well, and like they had a relationship going for those movies, but zero character development. The bad guys felt very half-assed, if not just stupid in
Wait,
both of them.
Which movie are you describing? This one?
Oh, come on. he didn't have enough screen time to fully develop. But I totally got where he was coming from. The Vulture is very compelling.
All right, so my basic assessment of this movie is that I had more fun watching Spider-Man in the 5 minutes he was in Civil War. They got more mileage out of him in that 5 minutes than they did in this entire movie. That's all I can say about Homecoming.
All right, so I can close it off. That means I win! I mean, look, it's way better than the Mark Webb films. Although, I still enjoy the Mark Webb films. I actually really, really like Spider-Man 3. I acknowledge its problems, but I still think there's enough of Sam Raimi's like magic touch in that film that despite the studio interference, there's still a lot to admire and love about that movie. But this movie, I think in terms of like at least the last three Spider-Man films and maybe even most Marvel films, I think it's the most balanced in terms of trying to tell a standalone story, focus on his character, still acknowledge the rest of the Marvel cinematic universe, and kickstart a new sort of like franchise. So I don't know. I mean, it's tough. It's tough for director John Watts, you know, to kind of like sit in the director's chair and make this movie. I mean, I'm not entirely sure. Like,
he has to
it's
play
tough.
By the rules. Like, I don't blame him for sure.
That's a thing. That's a thing. And I think that you know, there's nothing we can say because Marvel makes like $500 billion per movie, so they're not going to change their winning formula. It would just be nice. Like, it would be nice if we got the kind of like movie that was more standalone. But, you know, like, I mean, I will say this, you know, like Logan, first two acts of Logan, incredible, hated the third act. Guardians of the Galaxy, first two acts, amazing, hated the third act. This movie feels more balanced. It feels like there was a lot of good in act one, two, and three, like, from start to finish. There was a lot of things I enjoyed throughout the whole entire film. Did not find it a slog. Highly entertaining. Loved the performance by, once again, Tom Holland. And am I excited to see the next Spider-Man film? I don't know. It really depends. If John Watts returns and if he has a bit more creative freedom as a director, and maybe like let him write the film. Like, we don't need six screenplay writers, guys.
One guy write the film. That would be amazing. But that probably won't happen.
But, hey, Michael Keaton's in his film.
Go see Birdman. That we should probably wrap up. This was a highly contentious debate. Did not expect a Marvel movie to inspire such strong, passionate feelings. But that was perfect that you came on, Tim, because that way I was able to completely rail on this thing, and you were able to defend it.
I felt like I have a lot of problems with this movie that knocked it down from, like, you know, that ideal score. You know, no movie's perfect, but like this movie is not a 9 or a 10 out of 10 in my book. It's, and I feel like I almost sounded like that, where like a lot of my feelings about the movie, like I didn't even get into my fandom of the comics and how I feel about some of the characters, but I, you know, We'll have other times.
I think you came off exactly how you wanted to. It didn't sound like you were completely, like you said, it didn't sound like you were giving this a perfect 10 or anything, but you were defending it against, because I'm giving it, I probably came off like I was giving it close to a 0 or a 1.
Zero.
In many
it
ways.
It sounds like you hate it.
It sounded like you barfed as soon as you left the cinema.
I did. Luckily, what came up wasn't anything I needed. all right. It's okay. Time for us to go. Tim, really quickly, where can we find you?
You can find me hosting N-Express with these two clowns every week talking about Nintendo, so go check that out. You can find me on Goomba Stomp. I think that I have an article about how important the character of Peter Parker is that I wrote a really long time ago, and I think it's on Goomba Stomp. I don't know. I originally wrote it for the other site, so it might be gone.
Go find it.
If it's not up, then we should totally put it up, because I think Peter Parker as a character is super important to pop culture. But anyway, besides that, just find my other stuff on Goomba Stomp.
And you can find me operating the N-Express Twitter account at N-Express Nintendo, also on the N-Express podcast, where Tim and I usually agree on things, to tell you the truth.
Almost always.
Yeah. And Rick, what does everybody need to know about the website?
Wow, I'm last again. This is amazing. Double win for me today. So here's the thing. So we all host the N-Express Nintendo podcast. If you like video games, specifically Nintendo, check it out. What's funny is every week these guys make fun of me because I always have a new favorite game. So like technically I'm the most positive person on that podcast. Yet someone left an iTunes rating saying I'm like the most negative person on that podcast. So maybe they're confusing our voices. I'm not entirely sure. But
let's go one by one. I'm Tim.
On Twitter, you can find me, Goomba Stomp Mag. I run the official Twitter handle for Goomba Stomp. You can also, of course, follow us on Sword of Cinema, the Twitter handle. Facebook, Tumblr, Pinterest, Instagram, you name it, we're everywhere. Goomba Stomp, basically, Sword of Cinema. And you can find us writing over at GoombaStomp.com/SwordofCinema.com, same site. That's about it.
Absolutely. And go ahead and check out my review of Spider-Man Homecoming, which after this podcast actually seems pretty kind right now. That should about do it.
But don't take it with a grain of salt, because it's salty enough.
It seems pretty nice in retrospect, considering what I just said on this podcast. But that should do it for today's show. Until next time.
Spider-Man from YouTube.
I'm not.
You were on the ceiling.
I wasn't. Ned, what are you doing in my room?
May let me in. You said we're going to finish a Death Star.
She doesn't know. Nobody knows. Well, I mean, Mr. Stark knows because he made my suit, but that's it.
Was Tony Stark made you that? Are you an Avenger?
Yeah, basically.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man. Deliver a Spider-Man. He's a web in his hands. That's his keys to that closet again. Here comes a Spider-Man. This is strong, this is bold. He's got radioactive glow. Can't sleep from a grid. Take a look over here. There goes a Spider-Man. In the chill of the night, I'm just like a streak of light, you rise in the sky. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. When the man is ignored, accidents, his reward. Look out, here comes Spider-Man. Look out!
Find Spider-Man.